You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And those of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. I think you'll be glad, too, especially if you're interested in the strange and unexplained. If you are, you're in the right place, and we're going to be talking about some of those unexplained mysteries having to do with things most people refer to as UFOs, and they go by some other names as well. Got some quick updates for you. The telephone number tonight when you get ready to call in is a toll-free number. Thanks to one of our listeners, we have now been able to reinstate the toll-free number. And that number is, and I'll give it out when the time comes, but if you want to write it down, here it is. It is 800-605-4461. Again, that's 800-605-4461. Saturday night is the first Saturday of the month. And on the first Saturday of each month, I'm in the chat room in our members area. Didn't get to do that last month, and that's because when we got ready to do that, our cable service provider was down, and so I couldn't get online, and so I missed the chat, and I actually missed it. I mean, I wasn't there, but I missed that too, and so I'll be there on Saturday night in the chat room. It's in our members area. If you are a subscribing member at kevinsmithshow.com, join us for the chat. I think you'll like it. I forgot last night to mention this on the air. Stanton Friedman was my guest. Ed Grimsley, who has been my guest, the night vision guy, he and Jose Escamilla are the producers of this new movie called Moon Rising. It will premiere out in Hollywood on January the 22nd. Ed had called and asked me to convey to Stanton Friedman that they would like to give him a VIP pass to attend. If you watched the show or heard the show last night, we were having some little outside help and some technical problems. And so I was dealing with all that, and I just forgot to mention it. I mentioned it to Stanton Friedman privately, but I don't know who all is going to be there. I don't know if Stanton is going to be there, but that's one of the people with a VIP pass for Moon Rising, January 22nd, out in Hollywood. All right. I've got an email in front of me that says, Kevin, you drink so much coffee during the show, it's caused me to wonder, just what brand do you drink? It must be marvelous. Well, I'm drinking my coffee. I got it here with me. It's in my Dewberry Jam Radio AM 1670 cup they sent me for Christmas. And I would tell you, but it's a secret, and it's great coffee. But it's a secret because that company will not sponsor anything that has anything to do with paranormal. So they don't get free advertising. But I'll tell you, if you come to Phoenix, Arizona, and I'll serve you a cup, all right? We'll be back with Ted Phillips right after this. And welcome back. This is the Kevin Smith Show. I'm your host, and my guest is Ted Phillips. Ted Phillips is one of the few actual on-the-ground UFO investigators around. There are a lot of people that investigate documents and research documents, and all that's good, and it has to be done. But Ted is one of the people that actually goes out and makes measurements and takes readings and gets photographs and picks up physical evidence. And he's been doing that for quite some time. He's been investigating UFOs for about 40 years and is one of the most knowledgeable people in the field. He is the director of the CPTR, that is the Center for Physical Trace Research. This is Ted Phillips' first time to be with us. Ted, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks.
I don't know, honestly, why we have waited so long. I don't know why I have not asked you to be on the show before. But I will tell you that you've got some fans out there that have sent me a lot of email recently and said, you know what? You need to have Ted Phillips on the show. And a lot of the people that are fans of this show are your fans as well, and I'm delighted you're here. Ted, how long have you been doing this UFO investigation? I said it was about 40 years. I don't know if that's actually correct, but that's what I surmised from reading on your website.
Yeah, that's close enough. I had been interested in the subject for a number of years before that, even as a young kid, but 1964, I really started looking in the cases as an independent investigator, and that was primarily the result of this Coral, New Mexico landing, and I had been kind of on the fence about UFOs since my younger years, and that particular case really swayed me in the positive direction. And so actually about 1964, and then 4 years later, I was asked to join Dr. J. Allen Hynek's Invisible College, and it went way up from there, I'll guarantee you. What a wonderful guy.
Yeah, and he is tremendously missed. I think it was, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he was in London for a conference and was struck by a drunk driver.
No, that wasn't Allen.
I'm thinking about someone else. Yeah, I'm thinking about John, can't think of his name now, but he ran the Center for Psychological Investigation of the Paranormal.
And, yes.
Yeah, J. Allen Hynek was the one that was part of Blue Book originally.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he saw so much as part of Blue Book that he determined that, by golly, there's something to this.
Yes, he did. And as a matter of fact, the Socorro case was kind of a swing factor for Allen also. And he, of course, investigated the case on behalf of the Air Force, along with the Project Blue Book director and a number of other military folks. And he was mightily impressed by the witness and by the physical evidence that this thing left, and the event itself.
Now, the Socorro case was the one I think most people are familiar with it, with the police officer Lonnie Zamora, right?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, just describe that for us briefly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Zamora was chasing a speeding motorist at the south edge of Socorro, and it was late evening, but still daylight. And as he was pursuing the speeder, he saw through his side window a silvery object with a sort of blue flame beneath it that was descending pretty rapidly toward the ground. And he broke off the chase, thinking that it was some kind of aircraft about to crash. And as it got closer, it was moving out over the desert area just outside of Socorro, and he put the patrol car on a terrible little single-lane gravel and sand road, and the thing disappeared in front of him behind a ridge. And when he crested that ridge, he looked off to the side, and he saw there about 185 feet away, again in daylight, an object that looked like just a huge propane tank, I guess. It was elongated about 18, 20 feet in length, had a metallic appearance, and was sitting on the ground on four structured legs. And beneath it, even at that point, he could see a couple of little guys. And he got out of the patrol car. He called in to dispatch to tell him, at that point he thought it was some kind of a wreck, and that he was going to investigate and to send help, and he got out of the car. And as he did so, he could see these two small guys, later determined to be about three and a half feet tall, because they were standing by some brush, and it was later measured and determined their height. And he seemed to be doing something, fooling with something underneath this object. And as he left the patrol car, suddenly he could no longer see the little guys, but there was a tremendous burst of blue-white fire coming out of the bottom of it, a tremendous roar. And it ascended vertically 30, 40 feet. The sound stopped, and it was stationary above the ground briefly, and then started flying away from that location, slowly, not at a great speed. And when Zamora, he actually dropped to the ground at the point of this roar, because he didn't know if it was going to blow up or what. And as he was getting up from the ground, New Mexico highway patrolman drove up and joined him, and they walked down. He told the patrolman what had happened, and they walked down into a lower elevation section, and they found there brush still burning from the heat of this exhaust or whatever it was. And it was later determined that this brush had been exposed to tremendous heat. And they also found four indentations in the ground, about 8 by 10 inches in size, a kind of rectangular footprint, we'll say, where the landing gear, the landing pads on that had gone into the sandy ground. And they were Bill Powers at Northwestern University, put together quite a engineering report on the distribution of these pads, and his conclusion was that the landing gear was engineered in such a way that it would keep the object level in just about any kind of terrain. The foot pads would automatically disperse at the right angles and the right heights and so on to level the object. And this thing weighed, according to the compression of the imprints, several tons. So we're talking about, you know, not ghosts and goblins, but a very real physical object.
Well, and that is really the point for you, because you, your approach to investigation is that you're looking for what I think most of us would call forensic evidence, things that can be quantified.
Exactly.
And I want to get into some of your investigations. The one I'm familiar with as being very recent, and actually it's been going on for a while, but you've recently been involved with it as well, is the Marley Woods investigation.
Oh, yes.
Where is Marley Woods, and what is all of this?
About all I can say about the location is it's in the central United States, and the reason is that in December of 1998, I received a call from one of the property owners in that area. It's a very remote area made up of small farms and ranches, and the gentleman and his wife, his son and daughter, had just a terrific close encounter on December the 15th of that year. And he had me checked out. He called me and he asked me if I would be interested in coming over and investigating some of these events, which continued after the first sighting. And I said, sure. Well, as I got involved, we started finding a lot of witnesses, and none of those people wanted any publicity whatsoever. And they would talk freely with me about their sightings and so on, under the condition that I would not reveal the location or their names or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, with the things that are going on over there and have been now for over 10 years, if the location was given out, they would be absolutely swarmed with people wanting to see this stuff.
Yeah, now you've got some photographs on your website of some of the things that have been seen over at Marley Woods.
Yes, yeah.
And they're really quite amazing.
Yes, they are. And I have to tell you, all those years of investigating landing cases, I was never able to actually see an object that that I couldn't identify. And Marley Woods is the first place in 44 years that I've not only been able to see these things but photograph them. And fortunately, other people have been photographing them too, and we've been able to trace events back. We've found witnesses who had talked to family, friends, and so on about their sightings. We've been able to trace this back as early as 1937. And they were seeing sort of the same things. And after 10 years of investigation over there, I now have on file 611 known events and 217 witnesses. And not one of those witnesses have ever has ever gone public, which I think lends a lot to their credibility. Not only the sheer numbers, but the fact that they're not making up lies and talking about them.
And, now, they do allow you to use some of their photos, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I and the SIU team, which I formed a couple of years ago, this month, as a matter of fact, have taken a number of those images. But the gentleman that called me, his, at that time, in 1998, his ranch was kind of the central point of these sightings. And fortunately, he went out and he bought a camcorder. And he and his wife and local friends and neighbors would sit out there and watch his stuff. And he would videotape it with lots of witnesses alongside. And we have hours of video of these things. And then since the forming of the SIU, we've been in there and we've been able to obtain some really terrific video and still shots.
Okay, a couple of questions. SIU, what is that, Site Investigation Unit?
Special Investigations Unit.
That was close.
And
okay. Special Investigations Unit, okay. And
yeah.
Now, these things that are being seen at Marley Woods, it's continuing up till the present. Are they craft or are they some type of entities?
The one thing that has not been reported there is any kind of beings.
Mm-hmm.
We've just about gone through the spectrum of UFO events other than any little guys or big guys, whatever, and which is kind of unusual. I've expected year after year that some of that would probably start. Because in the landing cases, just under 21% of those involve beings, humanoids. So, but that hasn't been reported over there. Basically, there are a number of different things that are seen. And in saying that they're ongoing, they really are. The latest sighting was 2 days ago at 6:14 in the morning. And the object was seen by myself and Tom Ferrario, one of the SIU team, and is a very large white object that was stationary, no sound. The sky was beginning to light up at sunrise, and it was due east and tremendously bright, 3-4 times larger and brighter than Venus. And unfortunately, we were loading the vehicles with the equipment, and the thing snapped out before we could get our hands on a camera. But we have 4 CCD imaging devices that are going over there from sunset to sunrise 7 nights a week. And when we download that data, we'll have an image of this thing.
Okay, now, these things that are being seen over there, do they have a structure to them that's visible, or is it like just a ball of light, or what's the nature of them?
Yeah, the vast majority of the reports involve balls of light, and there have been a few events in which they saw structured craft or structured objects. And in one case, with quite a number of people in attendance, the property owner managed to grab video, about 3 minutes of video, of 2 dark saucer-shaped objects, which were traveling from east to west. And you can see a dome-like structure on top of them. And what's really extremely interesting is that they're flying at a fair clip. And suddenly the lower object, without hesitating, reversed direction and went up in a climbing trajectory back to the east. And that's a pretty incredible thing to actually see. And they, on a couple of occasions, have seen an enormous object. They say probably the size of a couple of football fields, and which they could see the black silhouette, and it was cigar-shaped, and the underneath was contained just countless small white lights. And he tried to videotape that, and you can't actually see the silhouette of the object, but you can see the small white lights below it. And so occasionally they do have sightings of structured objects, but not often.
All right, now, well, we've only got 20 seconds until break time, so I'll hold this question till we come back. But I have a question to ask about the many witnesses that you have interviewed there. And, well, I'll just ask the question and we'll answer it when we come back. Of all those witnesses, Have you run into anyone that has been experiencing anything strange that may be correlated with this? In other words, it started once they saw this. We'll get to that answer when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this break. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ted Phillips. He is the director of the Center for Physical Trace Research. Ted, when we went away for break, I asked the question just before break, out of all these witnesses that you've got in this Marley Woods case, or I should say in Marley Woods cases, many incidents, have any of these witnesses reported experiencing anything different, strange, anomalous as a result of these UFO sightings?
You know, that has had little presence in Marley. I've encountered that in other cases years gone by, but there was one gentleman, one of the witnesses, who developed over a period of time a sense that something, a presence, was there, and he would alert his family and go outside, and one of the light bulbs would be stationary over or very near the home. And he sensed that many times, and many times there was something there. What we seem to have in all these cases is the fact that people, when they least expect it, find themselves in the middle of some very odd stuff. And we're, of course, looking very hard for any kind of patterns that might allow us to be in the right place at the right time. And so we have actually very few patterns that are apparent. We looked at it from every aspect, the time of the year, months, dates, times at night, and so on, and it just seems to be that the encounters happen when an individual is out and least expects it, it happens. And
so there really hasn't been a proliferation of reports stating that something anomalous is happening to the witnesses?
No, not to an individual, no. It just happens that they live in this area. Marley is not spread over a very large area. It's about roughly a mile and a half in length, north to south, and just about a mile east and west. So it doesn't cover a great area. Now, there are sporadic sightings outside of what I consider the Marley Woods that happen quite often. But the primary focus seems to be on a small number of ranches down through that area.
Now, you're calling this Marley, but based on the fact that you're trying to keep the actual location out of the news, I would assume that is a fictitious name for this.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. So where does it go from here? Have you and your team been able to get any physical trace evidence of this? I know you've gotten video and you've gotten photographs. Anything else?
Well, we have had a number of events where a large white object would be seen, and within a matter of hours, there would be found generally a 10-foot diameter ring either swelled and depressed or scorched, and which of course is very typical of the actual UFO landing sites. And I would hasten to point out, these are not what a lot of people call crop circles, nothing at all like that. And but they do accompany events, and the rancher that called me in 1998 had one of the very best cases. Something hovered evidently just above the ground in a cattle chute. And this is simply an 11-foot wide area that is enclosed on each side of a barbed wire fence and is utilized to drive cattle from one field up the chute to another, to fresh grass and so on. And he was getting ready to drive his cattle up this one particular chute, not far from the old cabin that's kind of the center of all this. And he noticed, as he was walking down to the field where the cattle were at, in this chute, a 10-foot diameter ring, were, which had been freshly swirled and depressed in a clockwise pattern, with the central grass still standing, fescue, still standing normally. And so it was kind of a donut visually. And so he called me right away. I went over. I took samples, photographed it, and all the normal things, or abnormal. And analysis didn't indicate anything unusual had to been deposited on the plants or on the soil. But quite obviously something had been there the night before. This was found. The caretaker at the ranch went out to have a smoke about 3 in the morning, and he saw a huge white light over that area. So we have to connect the two. Then at one of the other ranches, there have been an inordinate number of cattle mutilations, and there was a series of those all involving young calves, and the rancher would find the newly born calf with its mother. In the evening, he would check on it. Everything was fine, and this is these are all very much locked-up ranches. You can't drive onto them. And so he went home. The next morning, he comes out, and the mother is standing there, and all that's left of the calf is the skeleton. And it had not been disjointed, had not been torn apart or anything like that, but all of the organs, all of the flesh, all of the blood was gone from this little guy. And within 5 feet of the calf, there was a 10-foot scorched ring. And this was repeated 6 times with 6 calves. And then there have been 2 additional 10-foot scorched rings on that same property. And one of the strangest events that happened, he had a prize horse, which, of course, was his favorite. And he was at the ranch one morning, and the horse was in its corral. Everything was fine. And he got in the pickup and drove to another part of the ranch, came back 15 minutes later, and no horse. And one section of the corral was broken down, and this was a tubular steel corral, pretty sturdy. And no sign of the horse, which was extremely gentle and not prone to running away. And he noticed a wooden barn up from the corral, and the 2 large wooden doors were basically torn up and pushed to the inside of the barn. And when he went inside, he found the remains of the horse, which was flesh and blood strewn on all the walls, the ceiling, and the floor, just as though the horse had just exploded. And the interior of the barn was just destroyed. And all that in 15 minutes.
All right, now have these ranchers, have they reported this to the police, to the sheriff's office?
No. No, they have not. And the reason that they give me is, and I understand it totally, is that, well, if I reported it, what are they going to do? They don't know how to investigate something like this. And they come out and they'll say, you know, well, predators. Mm-hmm. And they're telling me, you know, no, this is not predators. And one of these really strange parts of this is the lack of blood on the remains or on the ground. There is none found. And there have been recently deer found in one case, a large buck, with no visible means of death, in other words, no gunshot wounds and so on, or so on. Mm-hmm. And the head was totally removed, but in a surgical manner. It was not just crudely ripped off. And so that has been going on. And I've never, ever been really into investigating the mutilation things, because rarely have UFOs been seen to the point that you can correlate a UFO sighting with the mutilations. And in these cases, true enough, no object's been seen, but 10-foot scorched rings are real interesting.
Yeah. Now, in what you've shared with us this evening, there is a whole lot that says that these things, whatever they are, flying around Marley Woods, are intelligently controlled. But there's one thing that you've mentioned that, to me, really says this is intelligently controlled.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a cattle chute that was 11 feet wide.
Exactly.
And these things are leaving 10-foot rings. That means that it had to set down in that cattle chute with only 6 inches clearance on either side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that takes...
You're exactly right.
That takes some highly skilled piloting.
Yes, and I can tell you in a number of cases in years past, the actual UFO landings with physical traces, the things have flown in the dark of night into such restricted areas. That's why I don't hesitate. I have no idea where these things are coming from or what their purpose may be, but I do know there is, without question, intelligence behind them. And because of the way they've had to maneuver into some of these sites to leave the residue or whatever, and as you're seeing there, to come up with something 10-foot wide in an 11-foot area, and no damage, bending anything of the barbed wire fence on either side of it. And I absolutely arrived at that conclusion that what I can say is I believe that these are constructed devices, in many instances, under intelligent control. And what is so tremendously interesting to me in the trace cases in general, over the years, we're getting away from reports of the larger, like, 14 to 30-foot metallic discs landing on three or four legs and leaving a residue. We're getting away from those kind of cases. They're diminishing, and what is taking their place in great numbers are sightings and physical evidence being generated by what I call light balls.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll continue there when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with Ted Phillips right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ted Phillips. Ted, you were saying that the reports of UFO sightings, the reports that we used to get of, you know, 30 feet across and elliptical in shape, are diminishing. And now there are more reports of the smaller craft and lights.
Yes, that is quite apparent in the landing cases, and the where we would have, you know, as I said, the metallic disc come in and land, and a couple little guys get out. Those cases, they still happen, but very infrequently compared to the years past. And what I'm getting more and more cases of are these small light balls. And I use the term light ball to differentiate between what I'm talking about and orbs, which are generally dust particles that you get photographing with digital cameras. And these things are small, generally white in color, and they range in size from a baseball to a basketball. And they do some pretty interesting stuff. And not only do they perform some interesting maneuvers, but they come quite close to witnesses. And I can give you quickly a couple of examples from Marley. One evening about 11 o'clock, a couple in their mid-60s are arriving home, and this is out in the country, and the husband pulls the car up in front of the garage door, hits the remote, and the door starts opening, and his wife gets out to guide him into the garage, and suddenly the mercury vapor light in their yard goes out, and the whole area is illuminated by a tremendous, brilliant, pure white light. And suddenly, just to the right, a couple of feet of her shoulder, a basketball-sized white ball of light is passing by her and passes in front of her over the hood of the car into the garage, where it hovers at in front of the back wall, illuminating the garage with tremendously brilliant white light, hangs there for a few seconds and simply vanishes. And the really cool thing is that two of the neighbors across the road witnessed the entire event. Another case involving light balls, a couple were not far from the primary site in Marley, and they had heard from other locals about the lights and so on. And they were skeptics, absolutely didn't believe in this sort of stuff, but they thought, well, it'd be fun, kill an evening. And they're standing out here 10 feet apart, and suddenly to the north of them in a line of trees, they see clusters of small white lights that are just sort of frolicking around. They said almost it looked as though they were playing, and they were very near the ground. They would go up to the top of trees and maneuver around up and down and so forth, and suddenly two of the lights came out of the cluster and came directly toward the two people. At a point about 150 feet from them, one of the lights made an abrupt right-angle turn to the east and flew into a grove of trees and disappeared. The second light continued towards them. The light flew between the two people, 10 feet apart, at shoulder height. There was no heat, there was no cool, there was no sound, there was no air disturbance. And it passed on behind them. They turned and watched it fly over a gravel road into a field. It made a right-angle turn and went into a grove of trees, whereupon it exploded into countless tiny white lights. Now, explain that. You know, I mean, this stuff, and I'm getting that over and over. And just 8 weeks ago, a family of four were at the same spot as the couple. and guy's wife, 12 and 20-year-old sons, and they saw a small white light coming towards them, and the wife started videotaping, and she got 15 minutes of video of these things. And it first appeared as a single white light, and it swung down, performed some maneuvers, and then came closer within about 40 feet of the family. And it split into two lights of equal size, and they moved around about, as say, about 40 feet away. And for some period of time, all of this caught on tape, beautiful tape, and some stills, really astonishing enlargements, are on our website. And that's from an event that took place on October 25th, 2008, if anyone wants to go there and look it up. And so at any rate, there, when you enlarge the frames from this video, you're looking at these, what appear to the eye to be just a white ball of light. And in actuality, they are a very serious compilation of cloud-like structures with a very brilliant central light source. And you can see from those images, it's difficult to even describe what these things look like. And so at any rate, then they flew on slightly to the north and became stationary near a tree. And on the video, you can hear these people quite frightened, describing what it's doing. And it gets just a little bit stranger in that there was a small pole shed, metal pole shed, over a heavy wooden picnic table. And as they're staying there watching this thing out by the tree, a extremely brilliant red ball of light appears 20, 25 feet from them and about 8 feet off the ground.
Well, now, folks, we're going to get him back on the line, but you have to know this. You have to know that we put him on a completely different phone system from what we've been using. So, some people might say, well, you know, the phone system has problems. Because we have this happen pretty frequently now. And I put him on a completely different phone system. And we got cut off. What do you think? I can't prove it, but I have to say that it would appear to me that we're getting assistance. All right, let's see if we can get him back on the line here.
Hello?
Don't be surprised. I just explained to everyone, this has been happening frequently and during the show. And so what I did today is I swapped things around. I put you on a completely different phone system than we normally use just to see if we were going to get cut off, and we did. And as far as I'm concerned, that says we're getting outside assistance. And I appreciate these guys that do this, who have such a tremendously high regard for the Constitution of the United States of America, and who, by the way, are displaying to the whole world what they think of freedom of speech.
Yes.
All right. Ted, continue where we got cut off.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, on the video, you can quite clearly see these two red and blue bands of light, wavy bands of light, extending from the picnic table upward. As this red thing, extremely strange, on the video you can see it appears as a sphere of very intense red light,
And at the very center of it, you can see a kind of elongated bar of what, I don't know, a tremendous energy source or whatever. But it's one of the most startling things I've ever seen. And I have arrived at a conclusion that perhaps these beams of light were being generated on the video because of a very high electromagnetic field coming from this thing. And that's somewhat supported by the fact that the people thought they could hear sounds as this is going on, and actually those sounds are audible on the video. And when I went there with them, I asked the father, I said, now, what exactly did this sound like?
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. The assistance we got threw our timing off, but it's the break is taking over. So we'll get that story when we come back, and then we'll open up the phone lines so people can call and ask questions or make comments. We'll be back, folks, right after this. We are back, or at least I am. Ted, are you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, we'll attempt to do this second hour and see if the violators of the Constitution will leave us alone. You were about to tell us this story, and I had to cut you off.
Well, the father was trying to explain to me what the sounds they were hearing were like, and you could hear it on the audio of the video, and it sounded like something scraping. And so we went over to the picnic table, and he kind of jumped on it, and he tried to make different sounds. And finally, he just grabbed one end of the table and pulled it towards him slightly, and he said, that's the sound. And this picnic table is extremely heavy, and it has iron legs and is on a concrete pad. So while this red object was generating this light, these light waves, and was very close to them, it somehow either moved the picnic table a couple or 3 inches toward it or away from it. And a good friend of mine was at that location the next night after hearing about this, and he didn't see anything, but he did hear sounds like someone walking in the gravel around that small shed. And yet there was enough illumination he could have seen anyone there, and couldn't see a thing. So a lot of that sort of stuff going on. And also very briefly, a very important part of the events over there is an unseen force. And one evening, one of the ranchers and two of his friends were watching television, and all of a sudden they hear this this loud noise across the living room, and the 1/4-inch thick glass on the front of the stereo splits vertically right down the middle, and the glass is distributed out from it across the floor, he said, as though it was poured out of a salt shaker. And as they're running towards the stereo unit to check this out, they hear a terrific crash outside the house. And they run to the front door, outside, around the house, and to the back. And at the back of the house, the garage is located under the house. And he, that afternoon, had towed a four-wheel drive pickup into that driveway, left the tow bar on it, and locked it up. The vehicle had no engine. The doors were locked, the windows rolled up, and it was locked in gear. And this truck had been pushed 12 feet down this gravel and dirt driveway impacted the garage door through the tow bar across the garage. And when I got there, you could see the two grooves where the four tires were digging into the ground and not turning. And five of us tried to push this truck, and we couldn't move it an inch. So you're talking about considerable force. And that has happened to gates, steel gates, and a number of things over there. But the strangest event, a couple was taking care of the ranch where a lot of the cattle problems and horse problems have occurred. And at that time, the previous owner was in a hospital in Texas, and they were kind of watching the ranch for him. And in the evening, the wife got up, walked to the kitchen to get a glass of water, and suddenly the inside of the house was illuminated with a bright white light. She yelled at her husband. She ran to the window and saw a structured object, disc shape, with a lot of lights on it, descending slowly toward the other ranch. And her husband saw it also, and they got in the pickup, and they followed it, and then they lost it behind trees going down into that area. And they became a little frightened. It was late at night, and they went back home. The next day, at noon, they drove out to that property. And at that time, on the property, on the top of this very high hill, there was an old trailer and a small house. And they were located about 70 feet apart. And the grass had grown up very high all in around this area. And they pulled up to the end of the drive, and he got out of the car. And this is a big guy, about 6'7". And his wife stayed in the car and watched him walk over to the trailer. He checked the door. Everything was okay. He started then walking towards the house. And he was about midway between the two structures, and he fell or disappeared to the ground. And she thought, of course, first off, that it was a heart attack. She got out of the car, and she started yelling at him, and no response. She started moving in that direction, and he finally responded, and she said, "Are you okay?" He said, "I don't know," and his voice was very weak. And as she approached him, he was lying face down on the ground, and she walked up by his feet and was immediately hit on the upper back area by two sharp blows. Now, this is high noon, clear skies, no bad weather, and she didn't see anything impact him, and of course couldn't see what hit her from behind, and she fell alongside him on the ground. And he had fallen so hard that he had a huge gash leg. And when he was able to talk, she said, "What happened?" And he said, "I was hit by two blows on my upper back that knocked me to the ground." And these are both large people. And the guy almost died. He developed a blood clot. And he was a lifelong hunter, and since that event, he won't even leave the house at night. So that's the sort of stuff that's going on at Marley Woods.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yeah, Kevin.
Can you guys hear me okay tonight?
Yeah. The 800 system has a three-minute timer. It's going to cut you off after 3 minutes, so go with your question or comment.
Okay, Ted, I wanted to get your opinion on the mainstream media's coverage of the UFO issue now. Of course, having Bill Nye as their official skeptic now, of course, that's a laughable subject, and your opinion on the Needles UFO crash from earlier this year. I'm going to take your answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay. All right. What's your opinion of the media's UFO coverage?
Well, it is kind of as usual. You know, it's the idea. I've gotten so tired of documentaries, for example, that I rarely watch the things because what they tend to do is bring out the farm family and give them about 20 seconds to describe a very complicated event, and then they bring in the skeptics for about 20 minutes, and that gets pretty old after a while. And it just happened I saw a night or two ago on Larry King, Stanton, who's a very good friend of mine, and Bill Nye, and it's pretty sad. It really is. And I feel sorry for Stanton even to be put in that position.
Yeah, but you know what? If you think about it, you know, Larry King has, there are producers above him that decide what, you know, well, you got to have this and you got to have that. You got to balance it.
Sure.
Now, if you're going to do the balance thing, and, you know, if you're going to bring on a skeptic, about the best you can, the very best thing you can do to convince people the skeptics are wet is bring Bill Nye out.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, he may be a fine guy, and, you know, I don't have anything personal against Bill Nye, or I've got nothing bad to say about him as an individual, but he's so totally out of touch with the actual evidence and the actual literature that he makes a fool of the skeptics. I think he's the best skeptic to bring on.
Well, actually, you're right. It's a lot of fun to watch his face while, for example, Stanton is trying to make a point. I'm afraid I wouldn't last on that show very long. But he, you know, my question, I wish Stanton would just say, okay, Bill, how many good UFO reports have you gone into the field and investigated?
Yeah.
Where are you getting all this great knowledge that you profess? You know, what have you done to educate yourself on this subject? And but no one ever seems to ask that question.
He makes it quite clear that he doesn't know what he's talking about, I think.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well.
Good. This is Tony from Oklahoma.
Yes, Tony.
How are you? I mean, I said that already. Ted, how are you doing?
Fine, doing well.
Good. It's awful good to talk to you. I've been following your stuff for a long time. I'm really interested in that moonshaft thing. Are you? Will there ever be a point in time where you will have any kind of photographs of the object or the interior or anything like that?
Well,
that's the only question I have.
Yeah, and thank you very much. I certainly hope to have photographs of it. At some point, because we're planning on going back to Slovakia next year, or this year, I guess it is now, 2009.
Ted, have you actually seen that object?
No, I have not. I have all the original sketches by the engineer that found it, and I am waiting with bated breath. We have partial funding for the return trip over there, and we've got our fingers crossed that we'll get enough to make it happen by perhaps September this year.
Is that the partial funding? Is that from a film producer, or is it from another individual?
It's from an interested individual.
And the reason I ask is because there are a number of film producers well known that listen to this show, and certainly it would be something very interesting for them from their point of view. If they're not familiar with it, we want them to be. So let's dive into that.
Okay. And
let me announce for our radio audience that the telephone line is open, as you can tell. We've been taking calls. I failed to announce that, and our radio audience would not know the number, perhaps. The telephone number is 800-605-4461. That's toll-free anywhere in the United States and Canada. 800-605-4461, toll-free. All right, now, this is the, I think it's called the Moonshaft, is what you've called it?
Yes, mm-hmm, yeah. And I'll try to make this brief and as painless as possible. It's a very complex and terrific story. It really is. In 1970, I received a call from a good friend living in Pueblo, Colorado, with the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, and he knew of my great love for cave exploration and, of course, work in physical evidence. And he said, I've got a guy you have to talk to. And he told me very briefly what it was all about. And 2 weeks later, my wife and I were out there. And during World War II, a Czech engineer and businessman who owned huge properties in the northern Czech Republic, had been in their family for years and years, owned a large number of uranium mines, various types of mines, and when the Nazis invaded Poland and Czechoslovakia in 1939, of course, they arrested the businessmen, and they arrested this gentleman, Antonin T. Hurok, and who had 4 degrees in business and engineering, and was a graduate linguist, very, very intelligent guy. And at the time that I met him, in 1970, he was 72 years old. And he told me his story. He showed me a diary that he maintained throughout World War II, which was the most incredible read I've ever seen. And he kept all the records and sketches in this little diary, which he was good enough to let me photograph in his home in 1970. Well, to go back to the event, in 1939, he was arrested by the Nazis. He was put into a concentration camp named Thienwald in North Czech Republic. And in 1941, he managed to escape and sought refuge in Slovakia, went underground, of course, and eventually joined the Slovakian Underground Army to fight against the Germans. And in October of 1944, he had a battalion of 184 men, and they were in a trench fight with German forces. And the Germans opened up with heavy artillery and killed all of the 184, with the exception of Tony and two of his men, Jurek and Martin. And they were left for dead by the Germans. They'd been wounded. And the next morning, Hurok writes in his diary, he awoke to a tall Slovakian sheepman who was treating their wounds and building a stretcher. And Martin, one of the soldiers, was pretty severely injured, shot. And so they put him on the stretcher, and this gentleman, whose nickname was Slavik, took them for 4 hours up through the snow into the Tatra Mountains. And they arrived at the entrance to a cavern, very small opening, and the opening was concealed by stones. Slavik removed the stones, they went inside, and it opened into a fairly spacious entrance room. And what astonished Hurok at the time was that Slavik went into the holy rites and was blessing himself, the cave, and Tony and the two men. And Hurok immediately found that to be kind of strange. Why would he be blessing a cave? And so after a bit of time, Slavik had to leave and go back to his two daughters at their little farm. And as he left, Tony walked out with him and to gather pine boughs for torches. And Slavik asked him, please, not to go back into the cave because he had been in it one time, and that there were bottomless pits and poisonous air, and that it was haunted. And so when Tony got back to the cave, being an engineer and having been in the underground a lot, grabbed his rope and carbide lantern and some torches and headed back into the cave, primarily really to look for bats for food. And after about 2 hours, and a distance of approximately 2 miles, he came to a long, level corridor or passageway, and as he approached the end of it, it dropped to a crawlway. As he crawled through it, the cave then opened up into a large chamber, and at the opposite side of that chamber, he saw a shiny black material in an area that was exposed in an area about 24 feet wide, 17 feet high. And the really terrifically interesting thing is that this black material was framed by limestone and flowstone cave formations, which had grown on the surface of this. And that sketch is on the website in the moonshaft section, along with his entire diary pertaining to this event. And as he nears this large black thing, which he described as shiny, it was like looking into a jet black mirror, he noticed a crack coming down one part of it down to the floor of the cave. And he was really curious about what in the world this could be. And he figured out after several tries that if he took his clothes off, he could wriggle through this crack. And as he did so, it was coming to a steep slope downward. He found that this was a wall of this black material, 7 feet thick. And as he came out on the other side, he rolled down an incline, carbide light flying and so on, and until he hit a wall at the other side. And after he relit the carbide light and some torches, he found himself inside an enormous black structure, which was totally smooth, no seams, no rivets, no rough spots, and it extended upward about 16 degrees off of vertical for an unknown distance. And after seeing this, he sits there kind of astonished, and then he starts doing what an engineer should do, measuring and studying this thing. Well, he had to go back out to the men. He got some bats, so they had a really gourmet meal that night. And every day that they were hidden in the cave, he would go back to this thing. And he didn't tell Yurik or Martin about the artifact, for fear they might accidentally tell Slavik that he'd gone back there. And so as he's going back to this thing, he breaks out his pick shovel, military issued, and he starts chipping away at a limestone drippage, which had formed what he thought was the floor of this shaft. And as he broke the pieces up and finally dug down through it,
Ted, let me break in right here. This is a good place for us to break, because we have a break on us here in just a few seconds. And I know everyone's going to be on the edge of their seats to find out what happened when he got through that. Folks, Ted Phillips, and we'll be back right after this. We'll be right back. that's not the right number, because we change things today, as I told you. Don't call that number. It won't work, all right? That's the number we have our guest on, and the number you need to call is 1-800-605-4461. I'll open that back up in just a moment, but I want to hear the rest of this story. By the way, you're talking about these guys eating bats, Ted. A lot of folks may find it difficult to believe. Those who have been with me for a long time know it's the case. I've eaten bat. And have you ever tried bats?
I've been around a lot of them, but I haven't.
Well, it's something sort of like squirrel or rat. I don't know if you've ever had rats or squirrels, but it's similar to that.
I've missed those, too.
Okay, so he's been going back in and discovering and exploring, and what did he find?
Well, as he managed finally to get through this limestone drippage, which was about 60 inches thick, and we begin to see something very, very interesting about this. Number one, the flowstone and limestone cave formations that had formed on the outside of the outside wall of this structure take many, many thousands of years to form. So we begin to see the age of this structure. And the 60 inches of limestone drippage, depending on a lot of variables, but probably would take on the order of 6,000 years to accumulate. And when he got through this 6,000 years plus or minus of limestone deposit, he finds the skeleton of a large animal. And he takes three of the teeth of this animal and carries them through the rest of the war, and at the end of the war had them checked by a leading curator of one of the largest museums in the Ukraine, who identified the teeth as that of prehistoric cave bears. So we're now looking at something very old inside this structure that he could barely squeeze through the crack to get in, because the prehistoric cave bears were like 20 feet long, very, very big guys. But what is really interesting is that the prehistoric cave bear skeleton is resting on what he described as a constructed wavy grill work that went on down. And as he's extracting the teeth from this thing, he thinks that he can feel heat coming up through the grill work, and he puts his cheek and ear to the grill to be sure, and sure enough, there is heat coming up from what should be a very cold area down below. And in the distance, now remember, this is a guy very familiar with the underworld, in the distance he can hear what he described as something like a very large turbine. And so this gets very, very interesting.
Now, you've been to this cave, and this is where you are trying to get the funding for an expedition to go back and explore this. Let's take some calls from the audience. Folks, we're going to go ahead and open up the telephone line again. So the telephone number is 1-800-605-4461. 1-800-605-4461. And if you have a question or a comment for our guest, Ted Phillips, that's the number to call, all right? It is toll-free in North America. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada, to be specific. If you're from outside that area and you don't want to pay the international long distance, and that's understandable, you can use our flash message feature. And the way you do that is you just go to my website. Now, my website is kevinsmithshow.com. And scroll down, and you will see a link that says flash message. And you can use that and send me a flash message, all right? And then I'll read your comment or your question, and we'll address it. Again, the telephone number toll-free, 1-800-605-4496. All right, now, and you need to be aware that in order to control our costs on that, it is preset. You've got 3 minutes from the time we answer the phone, and then it cuts off. It's not me cutting you off. It's the system, all right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Well, I don't know where that caller went. Let's try this and see if we can find the caller. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling? All right. Well, for some reason, we're not able to hear the caller. What do you think this thing might be, Ted?
Well, I've only been trying to get at it now since 1970, and I've gathered a lot of information. I've done a lot of research. I've been over there two times, and I frankly have no earthly or unearthly idea.
But whatever it is, has been there a long time.
It has been there for, it's safe to say, probably hundreds of thousands of years.
All right, let's give it another try here with our caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Stephen and Kevin and Ted. This is Louie from Connecticut.
Hi, Louie.
Yes.
Hi, Louie.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Louie.
Ted.
You only have 3 minutes.
Hey, Ted. Okay, Ted, have you ever tried infrared on those ranches to see if you can see with infrared goggles?
Yes. Thank you for that call. That's a good question. Yes, we have. And, of course, we have night vision scopes, and we're in the process of getting spectrometer to get a better handle on the light spectrum of some of these things. And so we're trying lots of stuff. Unfortunately, lots of stuff costs lots of money. And we've had a lot of great people that have donated to that project. And we're really putting it to good use. But you always need more.
All right, Louie, does that answer it for you? You got another question?
Yeah, one more question. Kevin, about your phone system?
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference what system you put it on. As long as you're in the same location, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I've discovered that.
Right.
All right, thanks for the call. All right. yeah, that's true. The telephone number is 1-800. Let me get it on the screen. I haven't memorized it yet. 1-800-605-4461. 1-800-605-4461. And it is toll-free. If you're outside of the United States, if you're outside of Canada, we got a lot of folks that listen to us in the UK, in Finland, in Norway, in Sweden, Australia, Thailand, Vietnam, Taiwan, South Africa, all over the world. So if you have a question or a comment and you would like for us to address that, send me a flash message. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down till you see the link. It's in green. You can't miss it. and it says flash message. You click that and send the message. It'll flash on my, it's called a flash message because it flashes on my screen over here when it comes in. All right, Ted, do you suspect that this thing in the cave may be inhabited?
It's, well, that's a difficult one, but the very fact that something that to this experienced engineer sounded like some sort of turbine running deep in this thing presents us with a lot of questions and possibilities.
And now, there's a story from long ago of villagers that saw a big black object land out there, right?
Yeah, that was in Siberia. But it apparently, I've been in touch with the Russian scientist that's studying that, and it apparently was described in a very similar configuration as the moon shaft. And
so maybe they've got one too.
Well, it sounds like that is a distinct possibility, and they also believe that they have yet another one in Yugoslavia.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. I thought I'd take the chance of this toll-free number here you got. How are you?
Doing good, Doug. Kevin. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Hi, Ted. Nice to have you on here. You know, I watched that show the other night there, Larry King, and that guy who sat there bouncing around in his chair reminded me of a scared man.
You know, talking about Bill Nye?
You bet. These bunkers, they sit there and bounce around in their chair. I handed down to Stanton Friedman. He did a good job holding his temper. But you know the guy in the middle, I can't remember his name, he kept on letting Bill Nye get to him, unfortunately. And you know what really disturbs me about this here?
What's
Larry
that?
King has a very reputable TV station. And when he starts talking UFOs, the world listens.
Yeah.
And for him to put a debunker on there, take away from the real seriousness of this issue, and to cloud the issue to where he has to go to commercial break so many times, going off topic, is just a real waste of time for us people here who take the time to tune into their station.
Yeah, but consider this, Doug. Consider that Bill Nye pulls out a page and shows it and says, you see, the name and address of this person has been marked out, and that's all that was marked out. And, of course, they're going to mark out information like that. And then Stanton Friedman pulls out a page, and there's only 8 words that are not marked out. Okay, so what happens, it gives people like Stanton Friedman the opportunity to show how foolish the debunkers are.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting to a point where it's absurd. It gets to that point, Ralph.
Let me tell you, it's also getting to the point where a break is taking over, Doug.
Okay.
So we got to run. Hey, thanks for the call. All right, folks, we will be back right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, meaning, of course, we only have a few minutes left in this show. And the telephone number that you heard is one of our telephone numbers, but that's not the one to call. The one to call is on your screen on our TV channel. And for those of you on radio, it is 1-800-605-4461. 1-800-605-4461. And, Ted, you know, you brought it up, and actually a couple of callers have brought it up, the Larry King thing, you know, with Bill Nye.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't expect that a skeptic is going to come on and say things that you like. But you may be of a different opinion about him, but, you know, when this first started happening, my opinion was and is that that's exactly the right skeptic to have on because it's so easy to show how foolish they are. And we've got a caller, yeah. So let's go to the line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi, I'm Ben Harris, and I'm calling from Hollywood, California.
Well, hello, Ben Harris in Hollywood, California. Before you tell us your question or comment, let me remind you, since you're in Hollywood, that January 22nd, there's going to be a premiere of a new film, Moon Rising, and it's going to take place in Hollywood. So maybe you can go.
All right.
Yeah, maybe you can go. All right, Ben, what's your question or comment?
Well, my question is that I know you're familiar with the Mars and Venus videos on YouTube showing the buildings and the architecture. And what I really noticed from this after looking at 200 or 300 of these videos is that the airfield landing symbols are the same on Mars, Venus, and the Earth, as well as the pyramids the same. Just, I guess, really shows that Atlantis was multi-planet civilization. And I was wondering whether you or if you have a guest, are interested in commenting on that civilization. And if you look through those videos close enough, I've got three that actually show humans walking across the surface of Mars. So, you know, there's people there's cities there. And I've been remote viewing an old woman on Venus, and apparently there are people on Venus. They seem like desert rats, you know, when I communicate with them. They appear to be like desert rats with really no knowledge of life on other planets. You know, they're just there. So, yeah, I was interested in your comment on that, guys. I noticed you have a show where people have IQs over 110.
You're right. Okay, Ben, thanks for the call. All right. Well, Ted, what have you taken a look at any of these videos that Mars and Venus that show what appear to be artificial structures? And if so, what's your comment on it?
Well, actually, yeah, I have seen a number of those, and it's very difficult to say, you know, because lighting, shadowing, you can get so many effects. And I don't know enough about those videos, and I really haven't studied them, that I could comment on them. I really couldn't.
Okay. Well, I think there's quite a bit of evidence, photographic and video, that... I think there's quite a bit of evidence of artificiality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been asked, you know, are you 100% certain? No, I'm not even 100% certain I'm living on Earth. Well, that's an exaggeration. But, I mean, there's very little beyond our own personal existence that we can be 100% certain of. But I think the preponderance of the evidence at this point points to artificiality of some structures on Mars and the Moon. And I cannot say that I'm familiar with having seen that on Venus. So, but Mars and the Moon, I think there's some evidence of artificiality there. But could I be wrong? Yeah, I could be. You know, when we talk about UFOs, I asked you early in the show, if these are structures or if they, you know, are these entities or do they have structure? And the reason I ask that is because we have a whole bunch of those, strange things in the sky out here around the Phoenix area. And in some cases, they look like a ball of light. And when you get a close-up of them, they look like a kind of a plasma. You know, they're sort of, it's not just ambiguous light. There's some form to it, but it doesn't appear to have structure like an aircraft or a flying saucer.
Right.
And there's a theory that some of these may not be craft, but may be living entities themselves. I don't know. I've had folks on the show that talk about that. Do you think that's possible?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I can't believe I just said that, because for years I was strictly a nuts and bolts guy with UFOs. And because you could measure mass from their landing imprints, all kinds of physical indicators that they were real physical objects of mass.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there is, I believe, a preponderance of evidence that they are under intelligent control. And that's where I find these light balls so fascinating. We actually had, well, several times, instances where a light ball would collide with an automobile and would leave residue or damage on the automobile. Then the light ball would fly on away. And in one of those cases, we actually were able to analyze the residue from the strike. And one of the top analytical chemists in this country, a good friend of mine, and she came to the conclusion, based not on ideas but on actual data, that this small object might be biomechanical, because there were indicators that it was both mechanical and perhaps living. And one of the astonishing things was that, without question, it had been submerged in something like a farm pond within a couple of hours of its impact with that automobile. And when I look at the data on these light balls, for the first time in all these years, I'm beginning to come around to the idea that some of them might actually be some sort of living something.
Hmm.
And that's pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, I think somebody got him again. Interesting what we were talking about when that happened, wasn't it? Okay, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. It's almost the end of the show, but I can't let that happen. All right, so we'll just see if we can get Ted back on the line here. And, well, you know, it's just beyond me why someone would want to stop this from happening. Now, the whole phone system has been shut down. Now, isn't it interesting? It happened on the other phone system when I had the guest on that one. I put the guest on the different phone system, and it only happens there. It doesn't happen anywhere else. Oh, yeah, it's coincidence. Okay. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.